Hello, and welcome to the GCSE Art and Design Study Podcast. I'm your host, and today we're diving deep into one of the most exciting and often misunderstood topics in OCR graphic communication, typography. Whether you're working on your portfolio right now or preparing for your externally set task, this episode is going to give you everything you need to approach type with real confidence and creativity. So grab a notebook, because we've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's start with the big picture. Typography is not just about choosing a font. That's the most common misconception I hear from students, and it's one that can really hold back your marks. Typography, in the context of OCR art and design, is the art and technique of arranging type to make written language legible, readable, and visually compelling. When you treat letter forms as expressive structural elements in your composition, not just labels or captions, that's when your work starts to look genuinely professional, and that's what examiners are looking for. Now, before we get into the practical stuff, let's make sure you have the theoretical foundation locked in, because OCR assesses you across four assessment objectives, AO1, AO2, AO3, and AO4, each worth exactly 25% of your marks. Typography touches all four, which is why it's such a rich topic to explore. AO1 is about developing ideas through contextual and other sources. This means researching typographic history and practitioners. AO2 is about refining your work through experimentation. AO3 is about recording your ideas, your annotations, your process documentation. And AO4 is about presenting a final, personal, and meaningful response. Typography has to be woven through all of these. Right, let's get into the core concepts. First up, the anatomy of type. This is foundational knowledge, and examiners will credit you for using precise terminology in your annotations. So let's go through the key terms. Baseline is the invisible line on which most letters sit. The X height is the height of lowercase letters, specifically the letter X, and it's crucial for readability. A high X height makes text easier to read at small sizes. The cap height is the height of uppercase letters. The ascender is the part of a lowercase letter that extends above the X height. Think of the top of a B, D, H, or K. The descender is the part that drops below the baseline, the tail of a P, Q, G, or Y. The counter is the enclosed or partially enclosed space within a letter. The hole in an O, the space inside a P. The bowl is the curved stroke that creates a counter. The stem is the main vertical stroke. The serif is that small decorative stroke at the end of a letter form's main strokes. And the presence or absence of serifs defines the two most fundamental typeface categories. Speaking of which, typeface classifications. You need to know these cold serif typefaces have those small finishing strokes. They're associated with tradition, authority, and readability in long body text. Think Times New Roman, Garamond, Bodoni. Sans-serif typefaces have no serifs, clean, modern, geometric. Think Helvetica, Futura, Gill Sans. Slab-serif typefaces have thick, block-like serifs, bold, impactful, often used in poster design. Think Rockwell or Clarendon. Script typefaces mimic handwriting, flowing, personal, decorative. And display or decorative typefaces are designed for headlines and visual impact rather than extended reading. Now let's talk about spacing. And this is where so many candidates lose marks by not demonstrating enough control. Kerning is the adjustment of space between individual letter pairs. You'll have seen how certain letter combinations like AV or 2 can look awkward without kerning. The letters seem too far apart or too close. Tracking is similar but applies to a range of characters. It's the overall letter spacing across a word or block of text. Leading, pronounced leading, named after the lead strips used in traditional typesetting, is the vertical space between lines of text. Too tight and your text becomes claustrophobic and hard to read. Too loose and the eye struggles to follow from one line to the next. Getting these three right is the difference between amateur and professional typography. And then there's typographic hierarchy. This is about using size, weight, color, and spacing to guide the reader's eye through your composition. Your headline is the most dominant element, your subheading sits below it in visual weight, your body copy is the smallest and most readable, your captions are supplementary. A strong hierarchy means your viewer instinctively knows where to look first, second, and third. Examiners want to see that you've made deliberate, considered decisions about hierarchy, not just place text wherever it fits. Now let's talk about the practitioners you absolutely need to know for AO1. And I want to be clear here, knowing their names and dates is not enough. You need to be able to analyze the stylistic function of their work and explain how it has informed your own practice. First, Jan Schicheld. Working in the early 20th century, Chisholm was a Swiss typographer who codified the principles of modern typography in his 1928 book, Die Neue Typographie. He championed asymmetric layouts, sans-serif typefaces, and the use of white space as an active design element. His work is the foundation of what we now call Swiss style or international typographic style. If you're working on a clean, grid-based layout, Chisholm is your reference. Second, David Carson. Now here's where it gets really interesting. Carson is the antithesis of Chisholm. Working in the 1990s, primarily as art director of Ray Gun magazine, Carson deliberately broke every typographic rule, overlapping text, using illegible typefaces, treating words as pure visual texture rather than readable language. His work is a masterclass in expressive, deconstructed typography. If you're exploring type as image, as emotion, as disruption, Carson is your practitioner. And he's a brilliant one to reference in annotations because you can analyze the tension between legibility and expression. Third, the Bauhaus. Not a single person, but a movement. The Bauhaus school in Germany in the 1920s produced some of the most influential typographic work ever made. Herbert Bayer's universal typeface, designed in 1925, stripped letter forms back to pure geometric construction, circles, squares, lines. The Bauhaus philosophy was that form follows function, and this had a profound impact on modern graphic design. If you're working with geometric constructed letter forms, the Bauhaus is essential context. Fourth, Neville Brody. A British graphic designer who rose to prominence in the 1980s through his work for The Face magazine. Brody created bespoke typefaces and used type as a graphic element, blurring the boundary between letter form and image. He's a great reference for hybrid approaches. And fifth, Herb Lubalin. An American designer known for his expressive use of type as image, his logotype for Mother and Child magazine, where the ampersand contains a fetus, is one of the most celebrated examples of typographic wit and conceptual thinking in design history. Now, let's move on to practical skills, because this is a practical subject and your portfolio is where you earn the majority of your marks. When you're developing your typographic work, the iterative process is everything. Start with research. Fill your sketchbook with examples of typefaces, layouts, and practitioners that inspire you. Then move into experimentation. Try hand lettering. Try distressing printed type physically. Print it out, fold it, tear it, scan it back in. Try combining type with image. Try setting the same word in 10 different typefaces and analyzing the emotional difference. This experimentation is what earns AO2 marks. One technique that examiners particularly value is the hybrid approach, taking digital type, printing it, manipulating it physically, and then redigitizing it. This creates authentic texture and demonstrates that you understand type as a material, not just a software output. It also shows process and process is gold in your portfolio. Speaking of portfolio, document everything. Use screenshots to evidence your digital process. Show the layers panel in Photoshop or Illustrator. Show the vector points you've adjusted. Show the before and after of a kerning adjustment. Examiners cannot award marks for work they cannot see, and so many candidates lose AO3 marks by showing the final outcome without the journey. Your annotations are critical. Don't just describe what you've done, analyze why you've done it. Don't write, "I chose a serif font." Write, "I selected a transitional serif typeface because the high contrast between thick and thin strokes creates a sense of elegance and authority that reinforces the formal tone of my composition," referencing the classical typographic tradition explored in my research into Bodoni. That's the difference between a grade 4 annotation and a grade 8 annotation. Now let's talk about the exam component, specifically the externally set task, which is your timed practical exam. You'll receive a starting point from OCR, and you'll have a preparation period followed by 10 hours of supervised time to produce your final outcome. For typography-based responses to the externally set task, here's my top advice. Treat the letter forms themselves as your primary visual element. Don't add text as an afterthought. Plan your typographic hierarchy from the very beginning. Consider how type and image will integrate, not sit alongside each other, but genuinely merge. And use your preparation time to experiment with as many typographic approaches as possible so that in the 10-hour exam, you're executing a refined idea, not still searching for one. Right, we're into the exam tips and common mistakes section now. And I want to be really direct with you here because these are the things that cost students marks every single year. Common mistake number one, using default software fonts without manipulation. Arial and Calibri are not wrong choices in themselves, but if you use them straight out of the box with no customization, no distortion, no creative intervention, you are telling the examiner that you haven't engaged with typography as a design discipline. Manipulate your fonts. Stretch them, distort them, combine them, break them apart. Common mistake number two, sacrificing legibility without intention. There's a difference between Carson's deliberate illegibility, which is a conceptual choice, and accidentally making your text unreadable because you've placed white text on a pale background. If you're going to compromise legibility, make it a deliberate, documented, justified decision. Common mistake number three, superficial analysis and annotations. I've already touched on this, but it bears repeating. Listing that David Carson was born in 1956 and worked for Ray Gun magazine is not analysis. Analyzing how Carson's use of overlapping, distorted type creates a visual experience that mirrors the dissonance of alternative music culture. That is analysis. Always ask yourself, what is the effect and why does it work? Common mistake number four, not documenting the digital process. Screenshots, layer panels, process shots, before and after comparisons. These are your AO3 evidence. Without them, you're leaving marks on the table. And common mistake number five, spelling errors and pixelated text in the final outcome. I know it sounds basic, but spelling mistakes in a typography project are particularly damaging because they suggest you haven't treated the text with the care and attention that the subject demands. Always proofread, always check your image resolution before printing. Now let's do a quick fire recall quiz. I'm going to ask you five questions. Pause the podcast after each one and try to answer before I give you the answer. Question one, what is the term for the enclosed space within a letter form, such as the hole in the letter O? The answer is counter. Question two, what is the difference between kerning and tracking? Kerning is the adjustment of space between individual letter pairs. Tracking is the overall letter spacing applied across a range of characters. Question three, name two typographic practitioners and explain in one sentence why each is significant. You should be able to name at least two from Chickold, Carson, Bayer, Brody, Lubelin, and your explanation should focus on their stylistic contribution, not just their biography. Question four, which assessment objective covers the development and refinement of ideas through experimentation? That's AO2. Question five, what is leading and why does it matter? Leading is the vertical space between lines of text. It matters because it directly affects readability and the visual density of a text block. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back to your notes and make sure those answers are absolutely locked in. Right, let's bring it all together. Typography in OCR GCSE Art and Design is about far more than choosing a font. It's about understanding letter forms as expressive, structural, visual elements. It's about mastering the technical language, anatomy, spacing, hierarchy, classification, and using that language in your annotations. It's about engaging critically with practitioners like Chickold, Carson, and the Bauhaus, and letting that research genuinely inform your creative decisions. And it's about documenting every step of your process so that examiners can see not just what you made, but how and why you made it. Remember, all four assessment objectives are worth 25% each. Typography gives you the opportunity to score highly across all four, but only if you approach it with intellectual rigor, creative ambition, and meticulous documentation. Good luck with your portfolio and your externally set task. Keep experimenting, keep annotating, and keep asking yourself, why does this work? I'll see you in the next episode. Take care.